for instance, when he's eating the marmalade at the train station for the first time when they first meet him, and it's everywhere. And as an adult, you think, you know, this is, I remember when my toddlers did this, you would think, how can a single chocolate chip cause so much disaster,
right.
You know?
That's right. That's
and that's
right.
What happens to Paddington. It's just like, how did this escalate to such severity?
So A Bear Called Paddington. I picked this up the other day, read through it. It's a charming little book. But I did wonder as I was reading it, why do you like it? So I know, Tanya, that you like it. So what is it that you like about
Tanya
A Bear Called Paddington?
Paddington? How could you not?
I did. I liked it. I liked it. I thought it was cute.
I feel like I'm having to defend Paddington Bear. And I think it is just one of the most charming books for children that I've read. And I think adults enjoy it too and enjoy the humor. Obviously, you don't enjoy it as much as I do. But I was recently reading an article that Vegan Garoyan wrote from an essay that we're going to publish of his. And he said, children are always seeking out new experiences and they find them in stories when adults do not spoil these stories by superimposing concepts or rules over the narrative. And then later, he says, children live near fairyland and enter into it through play with an ease of which adults are incapable. So I think this is a great little story. I don't think there's anything really deep in it, but I think that's okay. And I think that children will embrace it, and I, as an adult, embrace it. I think he's charming. He's funny. He's innocent in a way that... that everybody else around him appreciates. I think the family that adopts him, the Browns, are just, they're your stereotypical couple back whenever. When was Paddington written?
I think it was in the 50s.
Was it the 50s? So this would be, 1958. 58. So this would be, they would be typical. I thought, especially toward the beginning, when they find Paddington just sitting there in Paddington Station, and the nurturing mother says, mm-hmm. Mrs. Brown says, we can't just leave him here. There's no knowing what might happen to him. And then on the very next page, Mr. Brown, who's very responsible, says, I'm sure there's a law about it. Yeah. Like, can we legally take this bear? Yeah. All she sees is this bear child needing help. And he sees... oh, no, we could get in trouble. We've got to legally deal with this. So I think the family is great. I think that Paddington's sense of adventure is great. You know, he has all these first adventures that he's never done before, like going shopping and going on an escalator in a tube station.
Well, every single one of those adventures turns into just this moment of almost absurdity. At times, total absurdity.
Because he's in trouble in every single one of them. He goes to the theater for the first time. Mm-hmm. He goes to the seaside for the first time. Everything that he does, just even being out at night after the play, and he's so appreciative of just being out at night in the dark with the lights. He's excited about everything. But he's in trouble in every single one of them.
There's a great, what I love about this, in my copy of the book, there's a great letter in the back from the author, and he talks about how the book came to be, and he was just sitting, and he said it came about largely by accident, and he was just looking at a toy bear, and so he just started writing about this bear and his adventures. And the letter is really interesting because he said, the hardest part about Paddington is not getting him into trouble, which he does on his own, but getting him out of it in a morally justifiable way. And so I think that's it kind of made me think of the Inklings in this way, putting something extraordinary in right. an ordinary yeah. setting and just watching that play out, because that is, you know,
right.
Because it's the new world, it's the, you know, Paddington is the unusual element of it, but putting him in the ordinary world, you know, of his family and of London is just, you know, such an adventure. And go ahead.
I was just going to say, my favorite one is when he's got his new hat and they go shopping and he goes and he's sitting there waiting supposedly not getting in trouble, and his and the hat falls over his eyes, but he doesn't know it. He's just like, all of a sudden everything's dark outside.
For instance, when he's eating the marmalade at the train station for the first time when they first meet him, and it's everywhere. And as an adult, you think, you know, this is, I remember when my toddlers did this, you would think, how can a single chocolate chip cause so much disaster,
right.
You know?
That's right.
That's and that's right. What happens to Paddington. It's just like, how did this escalate to such severity?
And then he says, which this is reminiscent to me of Winnie the Pooh, his love of marmalade, whereas Winnie the Pooh is this love of honey. And he's so, so obsessed with it. And it, a huge part of his life. It means so much to him. Food means so much to him. And they, you know, he says he's going to have to take a bath. They tell him that the children are supposed to take him up to take a bath, which is another, you know, awful thing. He floods the house and almost drowns. And but he says it seemed a pity to wash it all off quite so soon.
Yeah, that's right.
he's totally happy to be a sticky bear. So I just think it's really funny. But my favorite passage, can I just tell you my favorite?
I think this is your second favorite.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe so your real favorite.
Okay. So this is when they are in the, oh, he has the suitcase with bacon in it.
Yes.
The dogs are following.
Yes. And Mrs. Brown says, can you smell that, Paddington? I feel like I'm smelling the smell of bacon everywhere. And he sticks his little suitcase behind him and sniffs. And then it says he had several expressions which he kept for emergencies. There was his thoughtful expression when he stared into space and rested his chin on a paw.
Yeah.
Then there was his innocent one, which wasn't really an expression at all. So, you know, you could just see him with this innocent stare, like he knows there's bacon in his suitcase.
That's so reminiscent of Winnie the Pooh. And in fact, we talked about the similarities between Paddington the Bear and Winnie the Pooh. And they both... the author in both situations, you know, just basically makes the statement, well, I'm that sort of a bear. And that's,
right.
You know,
yes.
And there's a lot of similar language between the two. But when you're talking about Paddington's, you know, ready-made expressions and then the whole escapade with Pooh and the solution to this drama that they were in was to say, aha.
That's right. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
You know, it's just.
And
it's
they
so
didn't know why they were saying aha.
You know, just just the ideas
same.
Of children are just so charming, and bears.
Yes, and bears. And then, so we go from his several expressions that he's got to when they're in the tailor's, and Mrs. Brown's trying to get clothes for mm-hmm. him, and the tailor is not at all fond of having a bear.
I actually love that scene.
It is wonderful. And he and the tailor suggest that they go to the basement and get something out of the government surplus.
That's right, yeah.
And Mrs. Brown is just offended by that. And then she says, I've never heard of such a thing. Have you, Paddington? Well, he's never heard of the government surplus. He doesn't even know what it is. But he takes her haughty tone and says, never. He stared hard at the man, who looked away uneasily. Paddington had a very persistent stare when he cared to use it. It was a very powerful stare. Mm-hmm. And then as Paddington's following the guy out, he keeps about 2 feet behind him, staring very hard. The back of the man's neck seemed to go a dull red, and he fingered his collar nervously. I mean,
it is funny.
This little bear who, so then even later.
She's
okay, I'm gonna stop.
If you ever need to pick me up now, you
that's
know.
Right. You just need to pick up Paddington.
That's right.
And you're good to go.
I should read a chapter.
Well,
of Paddington
I think that's
every
this is demonstrating the value of the book. I mean, even if we can't find some kind of transcendent thing,
and there's not.
To it,
and I don't think there is anything transcendent.
Yeah,
I mean,
right?
it's a book full of manners and hospitality and the way that we should treat each other. And raising, you know, being raised, he was raised by his aunt. The
respect,
for etiquette,
right?
Even and their love of each other and respect for each other. It's a book, you know, where that shows a family dealing well with each other, not judging each other. I mean, you could say that the parents are a little bit more hands off than they probably should be,
right? Right.
But they do, like the Moffats. I mean, I think that you know, I mean, in these stories of all these escapades, I mean, I think what is lovely to point out is the reason that they're, you know, that they are able to have these great adventures is because there is a complementary attitude of forgiveness and mercy. And so just like in the Moffats, they have these adventures and mother, you know, mother corrects them, but she also, you know, accepts, you know, that they are going to make mistakes and she offers forgiveness when the time comes. And so
that's
kind of the same attitude I think that the Browns have. They just sort of like tisk, tisk, tisk with Paddington. And so I think that, you know, when it doesn't go too far, when it's not too extreme, that is a great reminder to parents is you have to give that space for that growth. I mean,
that
you know.
Growth and
that's
the,
right.
And the opportunity to make mistakes.
Right.
You know, that children need the opportunity to make mistakes because that's how they learn. And so I do think that the Browns, you know, when I was looking back through this last night, I saw there was at some point it said that he had been with them for 2 months toward the end of the book. So all of these escapades happen almost
very
immediately.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not a big time lapse here, but still every time he gets in trouble, and it's a lot, every single chapter he's in trouble for something, he's done something,
right.
But he seems to come out on top.
Doesn't his father say he always lands on his feet?
But then, they say that they never talk about maybe this is too much for us. I mean, they have literally embraced him as a member of their family immediately, and they never back out of that or attempt to say maybe this was a mistake. Maybe we don't need a bear living in our house. You know, it's this unconditional love.
It's interesting
for a new family member.
And you know, something that popped out at me when I was reading this was that they did take Paddington on, and it was an unusual thing, just like Popper took the penguins on.
Right.
And in both books, there is language that says, "Should we report this to someone? Like, this is highly unusual." You know, and in both situations, they wonder, like, you know, this is an unprecedented thing. What should we do? How should we do this? And yet, they both take on, you know, these quite unusual newcomers into their families and embrace it and enjoy it and benefit so tremendously, you know, from that.
But. Oh, yes. I mean, he's definitely a benefit to their family.
Right, right.
And there are lots more Paddington stories. I suppose I should read them.
If you're ever glum, then you can.
That's right.
You'll just be laughing in your office.
But I think there is nothing really deep in this story, but it is a great story for, I think our teachers love, they read it as a read aloud to their students, and I think they love it as a break. You know, we make our students do a lot of hard work, and we are always pushing them, you know, to think deeply. But here, it's like a time when in the classroom, they can just all come together for sheer enjoyment and laughter and just enjoy each other in that lighthearted way. So I do think it serves a very good purpose there,
even if
you didn't want to just study it with a guide.
But also it's a great introduction to, you know, the culture of London. And, you know, I mean, I think it might be one of the first stories where the students are really outside, for American children to be outside of their country, right?
Right.
And so just an idea.
I think so.
I think it is. And so the students, in our fourth, fifth grade curriculum, that they are in Europe. I mean, they're in Haiti and they're in the language and Georgia, they are in Europe. But this is their first introduction to, you know, a little bit of a new language, you know, just some, you know.
New terminology.
That's right. New terminology and marmalade even and train stations that may be unfamiliar to them. And so just, you know, a very enjoyable introduction to, you know,
a different culture.
That's right. A different culture, a new place, a little bit beyond their backyard.
Right.
You know, it's a great way to do that too.
And I think we just have to come back to Vegan's point that, you know, that we just not spoil it by really trying to think about it too deeply. It really is a story to be enjoyed. And there are great things that we can point out in it, but ultimately it's just fun.